Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Day one of the Players' Championship is in the books. And folks, it certainly appears we've got a doozy underway. Three of the top six players in the official World Golf Rankings. Please save your commentary for the OWGR until after this podcast is over. But Rory McIlroy, Xander Schauffele, and Wyndham Clark are tied for the lead at the PGA Tour's flagship event here at TPC Sawgrass after opening 7 under 65s. Rex, pretty stacked leaderboard. You have Phoenix Open winner Nick Taylor up there, former U.S. Open champion Matt Fitzpatrick, also a shot back, and of course, world number one Scottie Scheffler, fresh off last week's victory at Bay Hill, just two shots behind as well. What stood out from day one?
Rory McIlroy. Let's go ahead and just start with that. I mean, if we said anything else, we would just be burying the lead, and I don't want to do that at this point. I think what happened with Rory's round on many levels, since we can start with his play. I mean, we talked about this earlier in the week in the podcast. I think we talked about it Sunday night from Bay Hill. His wood play off the tee box, three wood, just sublime. So good. Second in the field, second only to Scottie Scheffler last week. And then I think he was 55 out of 58 players. He was 55th out of 58 players in strokes gain approach. It was just a terrible week ball striking from the fairway. And he talked about it earlier in this week that he had found a fix. I think the conversation that you and I had, I put Scotty 1A and Rory 1B. You kind of took exception to it. I'll give you credit. You capitulated on live TV. I would suggest everyone to go back and clip that and take a look at it. But to be fair, I was taking a bit of a flyer. I did not know. I was taking Rory at his word.
Rory himself said he did not know what to expect, and he was coming to the golf course with zero expectation. So I think his guess was just as good as ours was going to be.
Yeah, and I think you talk to Rory, you talk to people in his camp, there was a degree of optimism. They felt like he had figured it out. Essentially, it's two swings. You have a driver swing, and you have an iron swing. And he just has to convince himself. When you stand on a tee box, okay, this is a driver swing. When he's in the fairway, this is the iron swing. Twice today, that seems like the wires got crossed, and we're going to talk about that. He came over the top on some drivers at some inopportune moments, but that's first and foremost. And I think we shouldn't ignore this part because it's going to get glossed over because of what's happening, but he putted really, really well as well. So everything kind of fell into place for Rory McIlroy today, except two holes. And that was the 18th hole and the 7th hole, where he came over the top and hit his drivers into the water on both occasions. And you and I both wrote about it today. On both occasions, there was some sort of question about where his ball crossed into the hazard, where it bounced, where it maybe crossed the red line, and where he ended up taking his drop. Probably the one at 18 is not that big of a deal, but the one at 7 seems like it was the big deal, because that's where we pick up the audio. I suggest everyone go to golfchannel.com and read what sort of transpired between his playing partners, Jordan Spieth and Victor Hovland, because it's one of those situations in golf, like nothing gets golf Twitter and golf social media fired up like some sort of rules controversy, either real or perceived. I think this one was perceived, but we don't know yet because neither Jordan nor Victor stopped to talk to us about it.
Yeah, this was actually like a much needed reprieve from all the talk about billions and the Saudis and improving the product. Like, we have not had a good old fashioned rules controversy in a very long time. And it always seems to bubble up here, does it not, Rex, at TPC Sawgrass? Remember a couple years ago, I think it was actually Victor Hovland was also involved in that one with Daniel Berger. Obviously, the infamous one with Tiger Woods and Casey Wittenberg back in 2013. Rory himself said this golf course is just more conducive to those types of situations for whatever reason. I think there's a lot of kind of visual deception from the tee, with tee boxes going one way, fairways going another way, hazards kind of in every which direction. And so I certainly think there's definitely some judgment calls when it comes to where exactly it crossed, where it hit. There's some blind shots as well. So I can see where that could potentially cause some issues. Just to button up the play, if you're Rory McIlroy, you have to feel phenomenal walking off the golf course today. He is arguably driving the ball as well as he ever has in his entire career. And yet, as we're recording this podcast, he's currently 109th in the field strokes gained off the tee of 143 players who are currently playing Tom Kim WD because of illness earlier today. You mentioned the two tee shots. 18 was certainly a surprise. We were thinking he's potentially going to tie the nine-hole scoring record at TPC Sawgrass on the back nine with a 29, and said he kind of ropes it. And you're exactly right, where that was the situation where he was pretty sure where it crossed, consulted with the rest of his playing partners, ended up having 280 into the hole for his third shot, ended up hitting it up on the green and making bogey. As you mentioned, Rex, the big controversy, and I think the story of day one, was what transpired on the seventh hole, Rory's 16th of the day. According to Rory McIlroy, he said he was, quote, adamant that his ball hit above the penalty area and then kicked back in to the water, and that he was able to drop there. But there was certainly a discrepancy. People on site, people in the vicinity, weren't sure one way or another. It was a big deal, because it potentially would have been a 250-yard difference, roughly, between where Rory was going to be dropping, where he thought, and if he didn't, where it exactly crossed. I'm not sure, Rex, who you think was in the right here. Obviously, Spieth has a right to protect himself, protect the field. Rory was certainly defending himself as well. But reading the transcript, listening to Rory, again, Jordan Spieth literally ran into the clubhouse, literally ran, like from the scoring tent.
I don't know if he was running away from us, but he was running away from something, or running to one of the two.
He was running away to whatever the case may be. And Victor Hovland, who actually double bogeyed his last hole of the day, declined to speak with the media as well. But who do you think, was anyone in the wrong here? Rex, do you think the right ruling was administered on this one?
I think it was, and here's why I say that. And again, I'm gonna withhold a modicum of judgment, because again, I really want to talk to Jordan. I really want to talk to Victor and get their thoughts. When you listen to what they actually said, and look, I watched the tape a couple times. It kind of turned into the Zapruder film today, and it definitely bounces before it goes into the water. The question is, how far down the bank did it bounce? Was it below or above the red line? Golf rules can be stupid sometimes. This is one of those situations. But even Rory, after the round, when we asked him, you know, can you tell us what was transpiring between you and Jordan Spieth? Even Rory was really quick to say, look, he was just trying to protect the field. Like, that's what a fellow competitor should be. And I think, and we have seen this from Rory McIlroy, he will go out of his way to make sure that whatever it is he's doing is right. And I think it was interesting, he called it karma. In basketball, they call that the ball don't lie. Like, if you had you taken a bad drop, it's going to catch up with you sooner or later. Maybe it's not today, maybe it's not tomorrow, but it catches up with you. So I do believe that
It was a little testy though, Rex.
It seems like it. And this probably factors into the fact that they probably weren't crazy. They didn't seem to be crazy about what happened on 18, but they sort of seemed to move on and dismiss it really quickly. And now it happened again within seven holes. And you're probably thinking to yourself, how many times is this going to come up? So that probably factors into it as well. I would like to think that if Jordan Spieth really felt that passionately about it, that maybe he doesn't stop to talk to us, but he's certainly talking with rules officials before he walks out. And he makes his point clear that I don't think it crossed the line. That's not what I read. That's not what I heard him say during the actual telecast. It seemed like he was trying to relay that someone on the tee, he said someone in the media, I'm not even quite sure who that would be, said that it hit below the red line, which meant that he would have had to drop essentially back on the tee box, to your point, giving up 250 yards. He also was really quick to say, Jordan was really quick of saying, I didn't see it. Victor was also really quick saying, I didn't see it.
So which this does not like matter. Exactly. If you're hearing from the spotter, if you're hearing from some random fan, if you're hearing from a media member, if you're hearing from a TV guy who just happened to be in the area and they say that it hit, that's not good enough. It needs to come from the fellow playing competitor. And both Jordan Spieth and Victor Hovland both said either some variation of I have no idea or I'm not sure. In the absence of concrete video evidence, that's not good enough to go for, and the tie essentially goes to Rory McIlroy. How much, Rex, do you read into the situation between these two personalities? If you recall, you covered the tournament at Pebble Beach. There was a little bit of a back and forth between what Rory said to the media, what Spieth said. Rory removed himself from the star player group chat. Do you think that factored into any of the contentiousness that we saw unfold in the seventh hole?
I mean, I hope not, because I mean, my entire column today was based on the idea that if you want to wrestle golf out of this slump, this bad hole that it's in right now, where we're talking about money, we're talking about deals, we're talking about players who are greedy, whatever the case may be, this is the best way to do it. Get a top player who's actually playing very, very well, puts himself on top of the leaderboard, and has not one but two rules controversies in a single round. Like, that was the only way this was going to work out. That being said, yeah, I think there's certainly animosity across the PGA Tour. There seems to be a lot of different factions for a lot of different reasons. I mean, it's born from all of the things that we've talked about. Whether if you're one of those top players that believes like the smaller the fields, the better. Well, if you're not a top player and you feel like you're getting axed out, whatever the case may be, everyone sort of has their ideas of what they want the tour to become. And it's gotten to the point where it has become personal. I don't know that that factored into this. Was that your take on it?
No, I actually hadn't thought of that until another media member brought up just kind of the backdrop between those two players in particular. Those two players between Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy, they had the, I would call it the testiest exchange, where Jordan said everyone, quote, everyone here saw that it bounced below the red line, and Rory shot back, well, who's everybody, Jordan? And he kind of capitulated at that point. Just to put a fine point on this, Rex, I know we need to keep this podcast moving along. Rory McIlroy still made double bogey on this hole. It wasn't like he escaped with a par, and now there's this, you know, this mystery that's shrouding his opening 65 here. Like he was still properly penalized for what was a poor shot. And listening to Rory McIlroy afterward, he is convinced that he did the right thing, and there should be that should be kind of the end of the controversy here. He said he's one of the most conscientious golfers on the PGA Tour. He knows that, you know, it would play on his conscience, he said, for the remainder of the round if he felt like he was doing something wrong. He knows Jordan was just trying to protect the field. He was defending himself. He was adamant that he did the right thing. He does not believe that either of those two drops on either the seventh hole or the 18th hole, there was any sort of wrongdoing. What else, Rex, stood out to you on day one at TPC Sawgrass?
Well, and to put a, you know, sort of a period on all of this, our own Todd Lewis asked Rory at the end of his interview today if he was comfortable with what happened on seven, given that there seemed to be some sort of controversy. And he was clear. He said he was comfortable. So I don't know that that's the end of the conversation, but it's certainly going to be a big part of the conversation. The thing that probably stood out was how gettable TPC Sawgrass was. I started to take a look at scoring averages about midday, and it was hovering right about 71 and a half strokes. And I went back, and you had to go back 5 years to get anywhere close to that. Now, it got a little bit more difficult in the afternoon, but it was still 71 point whatever by the end of the day. You had to go back 5 years to see the golf course play that easy. We didn't have a lot of wind, a little bit more wind in the afternoon, but golf course is soft. It's in perfect condition. You saw very, very aggressive play, and I think that's going to be sort of the standard going the rest of the week. I think we have a forecast that's varying a little bit, but this seems to be what we're going to get.
Yeah, I think we're really poised for a spectacular weekend here, not just because of the star players, but also the course conditions. It hasn't rained in essentially 5 days here now, so I think the course will continue to dry out. The wind's supposed to pick up. I was a little disappointed that it's still as soft and as receptive as the golf course is. You saw a lot of shots ripping off the fronts of the greens, which was a little bit surprising, just considering the conditions that we've had. I also think you see a more user-friendly TPC Sawgrass. There's some rough collars that have been built up, kind of shielding the players from any potential penalties on 17. It seems like the collar's a little bit thicker right before you get to the bulkhead and dropping into the water. On 12, that's another hole where if you miss left, you could potentially run it in the water as well. It just seems a little bit more user-friendly, a little bit more receptive than perhaps we would have hoped for. I'm very, Rex, encouraged, heartened by this leaderboard. We've spent a lot of time on this podcast over the past couple of months kind of lamenting the fact that the best players have not performed well in the biggest events on the biggest stages. And right now we have Wyndham Clark, who's really proven himself over the past 10 or 11 months to be a primetime player. The reigning U.S. Open champion was in the mix again last week at Bay Hill. It's Scottie Scheffler. I walked the back nine with Scotty. That's just about the easiest 67 that you could possibly imagine. Did not do anything particularly spectacular, and yet you look up and he's 5 under par, just 2 shots back. I saw nothing from Scotty in the opening round to think that this would not be his title to defend.
I did want to ask you, because you were out walking and you asked an interesting question. I was in scoring, so there's no TVs. I didn't see what he did on 18, but I think the question that you ask is, when the mere mortals like us look at the approach shot that you had on 18, all we see is don't go here, don't go there. All we see is danger, things that are going to hurt you, things that are going to ruin a really, really good round. He pulled off an amazing shot from under the tree. What did you see?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I saw. And I was struck by the fact that Scottie Scheffler essentially did not miss hit a shot for 3 or 4 hours prior to that. He made one bogey on the opening hole when he missed a 5-footer, and you may have thought, oh, God, here we go again with that. But he played near flawlessly for the remainder of the round, but he flared his three wood into the right trees, and it was a really thick patch of grass. He had an overhanging limb, and obviously the water left. If you and I have played a lot of bad golf over the years, when you try and hit sort of a punch shot, you can flip it at the bottom and send that thing straight left. And it's the 18th hole at TPC Sawgrass is such a challenging hole because the fairway slopes dramatically from right to left. And to see the shot that Scotty pulled off, he kind of downplayed it in the media flash area, but like he played it, he clipped it perfectly. He clearly caught it well underneath the branch, kind of cut it against the right to left fairway on a shot that was pretty dangerous. So he starts it left and cuts it back. It ended up finishing, the ball finished really close to the hazard line, but it was never in serious danger. And of course, Scotty did what Scotty does while chipping it to 5 feet and then making the par saver to cap his 67. But I think in talking to his swing coach, Randy Smith, after the round, it can get monotonous what Scottie Scheffler does, where he's missing just two fairways. He's essentially hitting it to inside 25 feet every single shot with his approach play. But anytime it wavers from kind of that steady Scottie Scheffler, that activates something in his brain where something clicks on and he delves into the creative side of his game. That's actually really spectacular to watch. I find Scottie, I know, I don't think he necessarily resonates well with fans, but I think if you were going to attend Players Championship, Scottie Scheffler would be 1B to go who you want to go watch. Rory McIlroy's driving is spectacular, and I would highly encourage everyone to see it in person for themselves. But seeing the shot quality of a Scottie Scheffler is remarkable in person. The high hands, the footwork, the left to right, the right to left, the high, low. He could do everything. And especially when you get him out of position, he's got that creative imagination as well.
Well, and I think we just had this conversation last night just about the idea that he can get in that mode that he got in on Sunday at Bay Hill, where he's only hitting fairways, he's only hitting greens. That particular day, he's making putts. And it can almost become monotonous because he almost comes across as a machine. But to your point, he doesn't have to hit those shots, what he hit on 18 very often. But when he has to, it's amazing. You're right. I was taken by how quickly and effortlessly he downplayed that shot on 18. His line to you was, yeah, it was never going to go left with the shot I was trying to hit. And
the only thing I can think of, this is going to go left.
And that's a level of confidence with a shot that you and I clearly don't possess. I don't think many people in the universe possess that kind of shot. So it does speak to the confidence. And I don't think we can gloss over or skip past the idea that he gained almost a full stroke on the field today on the greens. And the narrative going into last week was, when's Scotty going to figure out his putting? How much longer is this going to last? He figured it out on Sunday, won by 5 strokes, but even coming out of that, it was, well, can he sustain this? Look, he didn't gain 4.5 strokes on the field like he did on Sunday at Bay Hill. But gaining a full stroke today, given how well he hit the ball and the fact that he didn't have to scramble a whole heck of a lot, I think that, in as much as just like Rory McIlroy, should send alarm bells to everyone.
Yeah. If Bay Hill was not the aberration, if he actually has found a putter and found this new routine by not lining up the ball, and if the changes with the setup that he's been working with Phil Kenyon are taking hold, man, scary. Scotty could rip off easily 4 to 6 wins by the time the Tour Championship rolls around in late August. Rex, before we get out of here, real quick, what's one thing you're most curious to see unfold Friday at the Players?
Well, I'm curious. Scotty goes out early. He's in the early wave. I'm probably going to go out and try to walk with him. You and I got an early hit, but after that, I was going to go out and walk. I want to see if the putting holds up. Like to the point that I just made, everyone's going to be watching. This is the crucial part of the game. Scottie Scheffler is going to go based on how his putter goes. And if he continues to do what he did today, which was a little bit above average, it wasn't great like it was on Sunday, but it was a little bit above average, it's going to be so hard to beat. And the other half of this equation is, I mean, this is really the first big event where everything has coalesced. Last week, you had the world number one winning. That was fantastic, but 5 strokes kind of took the air out of it. Right now, as you pointed out, the leaderboard is stacked. And I think we talked about this earlier in the week when we did the preview podcast. The Tour needed a good one this week. They needed to have the stars come out. And so far, you've got Xander, you've got Rory, you've got Wyndham Clark, you've got Scotty. Can they maintain this? Because this is exactly what they need at this moment in time.
Yeah, I'm with the conditions certainly appear to be ripe for a weekend shootout. For me, Rex, that story is Victor Hovland, the reigning FedEx Cup champion, has been awfully quiet, has done virtually nothing for the first 3 months of the season. Live from, I thought, did a great breakdown of him with all these contraptions, all these gadgets, really working hard Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday with his new swing coach, Grant Wade. He cycled through swing coaches in his young career, but this one seemed particularly curious how Joe Mayo took him to FedEx Cup champion, playing the best golf of anyone in the world, abandoned that method, and now it seems like he's back at square one with his chipping. His ball striking is a mess. He's out to the top 100 here in approach, and I think that's, you know, a lot of the frustration. I don't think it was necessarily the Rory McIlroy drop incident that's caused Victor to storm out of here. It's the fact that he has had it with this sort of play over the first 3 months. So I think examining that is a good story for me to dive into. A sneak preview for NBCSports.com/golf.
No, that'll be good. And I think we did a good job last night on Live From sort of breaking down exactly what you just sort of outlined. Like, he decided to go on this new path, and there's footage of him on the range with Grant Wade yesterday where clearly they're having disagreements and things are not going well. It's a lot of animation. It's a lot like you when you're on TV, especially without a microphone, and your hands are moving and you're moving all over. I'm trying to chase you with the microphone. It's not easy, but he's so talented. Like, I'm sure there's a level of aggravation now. It's hard for me to believe, based on what he did at the end of last year, there was no one in the game who was playing golf better than him at the moment. I find it impossible to believe that whatever transpired between the Tour Championship last year and the start of this season, that somehow everything dropped away. Like, I'm going to have to see that for a long time before I truly believe it.
There's a difference between curiosity and self-destruction, and that's a path that I look forward to digging into.
Testing out line here. You're testing out lines for your column, aren't you?
At the Players Championship. Rex, you have a hit to do, thus the shirt and tie. Sorry to disappoint the many YouTube commenters on Wednesday who were very impressed with how dapper we looked. I'm just in the lowly Golf Writer Scribe after transitioning out of my suit and tie as well for our early Live From. I'm not invited for good reason into the evening Live From. Rex, I know you got a hit to do. What are you going to be talking about?
We're going to touch on Scottie Scheffler and a lot of things that we probably talked about just now, myself and Todd Lewis, and just the idea. I was taken by, he finishes up Sunday night at Bay Hill. I think the celebration was a hamburger and some soda with his family, because that's Scottie Scheffler.
Sparkling water.
Sparkling water. Thank you. I think that's everything you need to know about, how do you say I'm Scottie Scheffler without saying I'm Scottie Scheffler? That's my celebration. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And his big, you know, his big relief on Monday morning was getting coffee and breakfast with his wife. And then he was right back at it on Monday afternoon. And I think it speaks to the grind. Like, I always kind of cringe when someone says, well, yeah, he's just a naturally gifted. Yeah, they're all touched by the hand of God, but they all have to work really, really hard. And this is an example of a world-class player who just came off a brilliant performance on a really, really difficult golf course. And he was out here grinding because he was unhappy with some of the shots he hit on Sunday at Bay Hill. No bogeys, nothing but birdies, wins by five, and he was unhappy. That's probably why you get to world number one.
Folks, you can catch that and more for Rex's bad 90 seconds of television coming right up.
That was good.
Golf Channel. I'm sure that will be.
That was good.
I'm sure that will be cut and trimmed and slapped all over NBCSports.com/golf. You guys know the drill. Head there for all of your Players Championship needs. We'll be back again 24 hours from now to recap the second round from TPC Sawgrass. As always, we appreciate the support. Thanks as always for listening. Make sure you check out Golf Channel for everything else. See you guys in 24 hours.